If needlework is your passion, whether you're stitching by hand, machine, or mixing it all up, you're going to want to hear about the Mr. X Stitch Contemporary Needlework Prize 2025. This prize celebrates the best in modern stitch and it's open to creatives from all around the world, whether you're a student or an emerging artist or a seasoned professional. And the best part, you don't have to send your work anywhere. Just upload high-resolution images to a private folder we will send you after you enter. You can enter more than one category, for instance, hand embroidery and 3D textiles. Just grab an entry for each one. And if you've got a student ID, you can get 50% off the entry price as well. The deadline for entering is 30th of June 2025, and entries are now open at xstitchmag.com/prize-entry. Thanks to our brilliant sponsors, Bookmarked Hub by Search Press and David and Charles, and the legends at Lowry Workstands. If you've got the stitch bug, this is your time. Show us what you've got. Enter the prize now. Visit xstitchmag.com/prize-entry to get your ticket today. Welcome to Needle Exchange, where thread meets thought. Today I'm joined by Stephanie Kelly Clark, an American embroidery artist whose work turns the quiet beauty of homes and places into stitched stories. In this first part of our conversation, we talk about artful parenting, we talk about the beauty in the mundane, and we explore Steph's journey from painting to needlework. Steph opens up about her creative upbringing, her kids' artistic inclinations, and the tug of war between craft and fine art. This episode is a long time coming. I featured Steph in my book Push Stitchery back in 2010. I've been a massive fan of her effortless, stylish, beautiful needlework ever since. If you want to hear a conversation with another of my personal heroes, then episodes 61 and 62 with the mighty Michelle Kingdom would also be worth a listen, one of my other favourite world builders. And don't forget, if you're enjoying Needle Exchange, please leave us a review on your podcasting platform of choice, as that would definitely help spread the word. I'll be back next week with the second half of our conversation with Steph. But until then, enjoy the show. I wanted to start by talking about, like, so one of the things I write down when I think about you is about life as art. And one of the things I notice is that you as a parent are not afraid to make your children do art things. And I thought, as someone who is a parent as well, I thought we should just talk around the houses, because you're quite bold in that direction, I feel.
I feel like, I don't know, my parents gave me free rein to be an artist and be creative. My mom was a crafter. My dad is actually an artist himself. He went to college. He didn't finish because he dropped out to be a ski bum, but he was majoring in calligraphy. And so I come from a family of creatives and people with just, you know, that artistic drive. But yeah, my mom was a huge crafter. And so anytime we're bored, she just encouraged us to go craft, do whatever we wanted. And I can't say, I mean, I don't know where it stemmed from, but I kind of bring that same thing with my kids. They love to craft. They love to draw. My son lately has been very into drawing. In fact, it's kind of now his downtime. Sometimes he'll get overstimulated, and now we've discovered that that's kind of his way to decompress. And sometimes I wish he would be a gamer, just because it would be nice to get him out of my hair or get him out of his sister's hair, so he's not bothering his sisters. But he'll play video games for a little bit, but then he's like, eh, and then he just goes and draws. And it's gone to the point where it's like, ugh, we're killing so many trees, Reeves, because he'll go and steal all my computer paper from my printer, and just stacks of computer paper just of his drawings, and then he'll just chuck them, and so there's just piles of paper everywhere. And but when I'm cleaning it, I love it, because I'm seeing these little characters that he's drawing, and you kind of get into the minds of my kids through their drawings. And I completely encourage it. I love it. I want them to love and appreciate art.
I always think that's where some of the comic book artists that I admire the most mm-hmm. were those kind of kids, weren't they? Just drawy. And it's interesting. I've yet to find out with my daughters what they really love. I know that Flora's sort of a nerd in the right kind of way. Like, she gets really excited talking about science and history and stuff. But also, we do these random things where I'll just challenge her to draw something. So the other day, I challenged her to draw two zebras that had fallen out over something, and then some hamsters that were seeing it and laughing or whatever. And then, like, and then she'll dive into that. It's almost like she likes, like, the design elements.
Yeah.
But what I find as well is that I'm almost desperate to project onto them, oh, this must be the thing you're going to be brilliant at. I'm glad I found it or whatever. But I don't think it works like that. I don't know what you think.
I don't think it works like that at all. That was one thing with Reeves, my son. I always encouraged him to draw if he wanted to. And same with all my kids. But it really has just been a thing that's blossomed on his own. We don't really push any of it. And when he is drawing with me, I've never been one to be able to just draw a character. I was never really a doodler or a sketcher ever. Still am not, really. My husband was, though, and my son is very much like him, and my husband is hardcore comic booker, and growing up, he was always drawing his characters that he would do, and from out of their minds, you know? And me, I'm like, no, I need references. I need references. And so I would find myself telling my son, hey, here's a picture of the Ninja Turtles. You can copy it. And he really, he has, as he's gotten older, will, like, find references to copy and learn. But I love his ability to be able to draw what he remembers from memory. Like, he'll draw Optimus Prime from memory, and of course he doesn't get some things right, but it's kind of mind-blowing that he, I guess it's a good way to practice. Yeah.
And you quite like getting involved in, I see often, well, what I'm thinking of is there's been times when I've seen you as a family dressed up in certain ways, but it feels like this thing happens maybe more than the average. Like, you guys are quite up for the we're a family dressed like this thing, or we have become an art thing all of a sudden or whatever. It seems like do your kids have any say in the matter? Are they up for it?
As they've gotten older, yes, they have a say. But for a long time, it's like every Halloween, we're going to be a group effort. We're going to be a group costume. But my son, definitely, as he's gotten older, he's like, Mom, I want to be a Wolverine. And he wants the cheap store-bought stuff. And I have to make it very clear that in my household, we have handmade costumes. And I will make everything from scratch. Even though I cannot sew, I will glue, I will do whatever I can. And that had kind of become this little tradition, especially as with me and my girls, this tradition to have, like, group costumes. The last couple of years, or this year, was the first year where I finally let them just be what they wanted to be. I still have ideas in my mind for next Halloween that I'm going to insist on me and my girls dressing up like. But yeah, dressing up, costumes, that's always been a big thing for me growing up and my family. Dress-ups have always been a thing. I have a twin sister who is a costume designer.
Okay.
And that's just always been Halloween. We take very seriously costumes. Anytime we can dress up. In my 20s, I was part of this group of women who would do these photo shoots, and it was really just a chance to dress up and be silly and have fun. So that is one thing that's always been a big thing of mine.
I sometimes look at you, so I've admired you from afar, Steph.
And I've admired you from afar.
since the minute you came out. But sometimes I think, like, it feels like you live in the world that Wes Anderson lives in.
Oh, I do love Wes Anderson, and I would love to live in one of his worlds. I guess I do find myself being inspired by his art and his not only just like his storytelling, but the visuals for sure. But it took a while for me to actually, I guess, understand his work, or the humor in his work, because it's very dry. And through high school, I was like, I don't get it. I don't know. I watched Life Aquatic. I think it was my first one. And I was like, I don't get it. And then when I actually like matured and became an adult and then watched his Life Aquatic again, I was like, oh, wow, this is beautiful and and visually stunning. But yeah, I take that as a compliment.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes, but that is what it was meant. Like, but I think there's something about, and I don't know, I find I don't have a lot of artistic output, but it's interesting when ideas creep up. And I find that there's something about the beauty in the mundane, which I think is the thing that maybe speaks in his work. And I think that that happens with yours as well, is that like, you've always done your dwellings. The dwellings were the first thing that I fell in love with. Yeah. You've just got these images of little houses. And they're just normal little houses. But the way that you've done them makes them beautiful, normal little houses. And I wonder where, like, how do you see the beauty in the mundane? Is that a thing?
Yeah. In fact, that's what, like, that series of the little houses, when I first had that idea, that's essentially the concept of that series was just the mundane. It was just the... I just want to capture these houses that people live in. Everyone lives in a home of some sort. We live in these little boxes. And then what happens in those homes is very intimate to the individual. There's beauty that happens in the homes. There's trauma that happens in homes. This is where people grow up. And so it was just like these ideas of... what happens in these homes, but also the homes themselves become like little self-portraits too. The way people, what color they paint their house and the style and how they do the landscaping. And so I guess it's mundane. It's something simple, but is mundane really mundane? There's always something deeper in there.
Mm. Yeah, it's like that parable, isn't it, of the guy who's hanging on a vine off a cliff and below him there's a tiger circling or whatever and there's a mouse chewing the vine and he sees a strawberry and he eats it.
Yeah.
It's a strawberry, but it's the best strawberry in his entire life. Like, that's the point, isn't it?
Yeah.
For us to appreciate the beauty and everything.
Yeah. Exactly.
Annoyingly, you managed to do it with about 4 satin stitches in a way that whenever I do a presentation and I include your slides, I'm like, you can see how Stephanie Kelly Clark makes these pictures of houses, but I cannot explain to you how Stephanie Kelly Clark makes these pictures of houses. Because it's sort of effortless, and yet it isn't. I'm really interested in how you can tell me, you know, what you can tell me about how you do those things.
Well, I mean, I think it's funny that you say that, because I'll have that same reaction to other artists when I see them do work. I would say, oh, it's just as simple as this. but, you know, where my background was in painting and drawing and then with the painting. And when I was in school, and I've talked about this before, like I took a drawing class my senior year and just kind of took a little break from painting because I wanted to focus more on my drawings. So my paintings can be better. But then I ended up getting a sewing machine and doing a bunch of contour line drawings on my sewing machine and playing around with that. And I loved it so much. And that kind of quickly ventured into embroidery work. And, you know, I talk about painting with the thread. And I just use my painting background to paint with the thread. I lay it out like a palette. It's the same exact process as when I'm painting. If I'm painting, I put out my colors that I'm going to be using and mixing them. And the nice thing about thread is there's not time spent mixing on a palette. The colors mix themselves as I lay them down. I usually sketch out the image beforehand. I'll have a reference a lot of the time, and I just paint what I see, and I throw the colors down. Sometimes I'll switch up the colors to make them more vibrant or playful, and that's the layering will create shadows that paint can't do because it's too, you know, flat, two-dimensional. I love that there's texture in there. And even when I was a painter with my oils, I would make it very thick with texture. And I don't have to do that with the thread. I can layer it. I can make it come off the canvas. And that's another thing that's kind of hard when it comes to photographing my work. I think every fiber artist probably deals with that. Especially when I used to apply for shows more often. You send them images of your work, and a lot of the time, most galleries are just, they'll just flip through the little thumbnails to see what catches their eye for certain shows. And a lot of times, my stuff would get missed because they just thought it was either some photographic collage or a painting. But it's more interesting when they discover that it's embroidery, that it's thread, that it's actual fibers. And that's why with my work, it's just, I love that you can touch it and feel it, and it's soft and it can collect dust. But yeah, as far as like, just, I'm a painter. That's what I consider myself. So.
They're not big pieces, a lot of them, are they, as well? I think that's what I've always been struck by is, you know, like, for instance, another person who is akin to what you're saying would be Danielle Fiancé Knowles.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. She paints with thread. She uses colour. She uses tone. She's got a very distinct style. Mm-hmm. You two aren't a million miles away from each other, but it's like yours has got it's not quite the right phrase. Her volume's on 11 and yours is in about 3. Mm-hmm. In terms of the amount that goes on, like your editing of pieces, your placement of just an object within the space that you're stitching it on, all of those things are the lightness of it all.
Yeah, it's one of those things that as an artist, sometimes you just, these decisions you make are subconsciously based off just how you're feeling it looks and what you want and the feel you want to go for it. And I feel like a lot of my decision making visually, I want to keep it simple because I want to keep the focus on, I guess, the main concept or the image. And I don't want things to take away from it, or I don't want to muddy it up like I would a painting. Keep it simple. And with that simplicity, keep it modern. And I think, too, for a long time, and I've learned to, I guess, make myself uncomfortable by making it a little more busy and crazy. Because for a long time, I know a lot of us fiber artists have to deal with this, that fight with craft versus fine art. And if I make it too muddled, like, will it start looking more crafty and less contemporary art? And so a lot of the time when I'm trying to make a decision on the composition, that's usually going through my mind. Like, I want this to look like a contemporary piece. And sometimes it's hard when you're using a traditional craft that people will argue, should it be defined as a fine art or a contemporary art? Because it's an old material or an old medium that's only grandmas use. And it is hard for me when people do, oh, you're an artist. What kind of artist are you? And then I was like, I do embroidery work. And then they're like, oh, okay, cool. Like, I think instant, they're like, that's not an artist. Like, you just do probably some cross stitches, you know, for your wall. Like, and then I have to explain, oh no, like, I do contemporary work with it. And usually I just have to show them because it's hard to describe, especially now because I'm venturing into the 3D world and then trying to explain to people that I create 3D works with embroidery. It's just, for some people, it's like, I don't understand what you're saying. But yeah, that's...
Leslie, I mean, what I want to do, I can't decide. I think I'm going to lean into that. Let's lean into that. Okay. Let's go on about, so how much does that weigh on you then? When you're making a piece, are you going, people are going to be like, it's needlework. Like, how much does that debate weigh on you?
Very little anymore, really.
Okay.
I think when I was first venturing into the fiber arts world, I was still a college student. I was still trying to find the type of artist I wanted to be. I wanted to find me, and I didn't know what that was. Like, when I first went to the University of Utah, I was like, I'm going to be a painter, and I'm going to paint beautiful still lifes that people are going to want to hang on their wall. I wasn't a conceptual artist at all. I wasn't really taught how to be a conceptual artist, but when I went to the U, I had professors that are like, great, go paint your little still lifes, but like, what are you saying with your work? And if, and like, ugh. And it didn't take long for me to realize, oh, this is what I want to do. I want to tell stories with my work. And painting is all I knew. So I was a painter and I was planning on being a painter. And I would do figures and portrait work. And I felt like, you know, sometimes when you find yourself, you're good at something and everyone notices you're good at something. So then everyone wants you to paint portraits. And so then I tell myself, oh, I guess I'm a painter porter. I guess that's who I am. And then once you get stuck in that, it's really hard to like venture out of it. Cause then you feel like, but I'm going to lose myself as the artist that I just define myself as. And, once I started just now, I can do whatever I want. And I can literally do whatever I want and no one can stop me. Also, I kept wanting to evolve in my work because my husband always says, and I like to quote him, he always says, if you're not evolving, then you're Thomas Kincaid. No offense to, what do they call him? The artist of light. But there was no evolving in his work. And I know I wanted to always evolve because I always have like ideas in my mind. And instead of just like, nope, I can't do that idea because it's not Stephanie, I just stopped with that. And if I have an idea, I'm just going to do it. And then I discovered, even if you look at all my work, even if I go back into my early years of college and I lay it all out, even though it's completely different mediums, it's all still very Stephanie. And I noticed there's just something in my style that will always shine through no matter what the concept is or what the medium is. So, yeah.
Did you, when you started doing, so I'm curious actually, because you said that just, you doing drawing, you're at uni, and then suddenly you decided to just try some stuff with a sewing machine.
Yeah. Well, actually, that was kind of, I was a little smart ass in school. I think my professors liked me, but they're also kind of like, okay, whatever, Steph, because I would just do my own thing. And I had, you know, one professor, he would want us to do these collages in our painting class. It was actually a figure class, a figure structure class. And we'd have our model up there. And he, for like 2 weeks, he wanted us just to collage. We had stacks of magazines and we'd have to get the values and the colors right and collage their figures. And I'm like, this is nonsense. So I would sit in my little corner and just paint the model and do whatever I wanted to do. And then 1 week I was like, fine, I'll do the collage. And I did the collage. I got like half of the figure done. And then going back to painting after that, it was like this little light bulb. I'm like, oh, this is like, I understand the collage and what he was trying to get us to do. I saw the figure differently. I saw, you know, values and colors and different shading completely differently. And in fact, now essentially that's what I do with embroidery. It's just collaging thread together to create an image. But I took a class. It was a drawing class, but the professor, who I do love, and he has since passed, Sam Wilson, his stuff is amazing, but he's an old dude, and he's burnt out, and the beginning of the semester, he's like, you know what, it's a drawing class, but you guys can do whatever you want. You can paint, you can draw, you can do whatever you want. And I was a little biffed because I was like, no, it's a drawing class. I came in here to practice my drawing. So then I was like, screw it. I'm just going to draw my drawing on my sewing machine. And kind of just to be a little brat, but it was something I ended up loving. And it was the jump into my fiber arts world. So thanks, Sam Wilson, for being a slacker professor that semester.
Just a random question. Did you ever wear avant-garde hats at the time? You feel like the sort of person, like from what you're saying about being a brat or something, I could just imagine you.
Well, yeah, no, I didn't ever wear avant-garde hats. But that just like made me remember, I had to take a 3D class and we had to come up, I'm trying to remember what the project was. We had to come up with a piece for a public space and I came up with this idea to make giant hats for buildings. So like go to Salt Lake City and just these giant hats on some of the biggest buildings that are in the city, just to be fun and to be funny. Like put a giant cowboy hat on the giant Wells Fargo banking building in downtown Salt Lake City. And I had to make like a mock-up model of it. And I had the Salt Lake City, and then like these giant hats for these buildings. So I wasn't wearing the hats. I was putting them on buildings.
I was putting them on significant architecture.
Yeah.
I like it. When you first started moving into needlework then, did you at any point have to was there a tension with the fact that it was needlework? I know you said you were kind of at peace with it, or you weren't bothered what people would think about you using the medium. But did you ever do that, because I'm using needlework, the content that I'm doing has to have a bit more chutzpah about it or something? Was there any of that?
Yeah, I would kind of struggle with that. Because like I would be like, well, because I'm using this medium of embroidery work, I felt like it had to, the conceptual story that I was telling, whatever it was, the imagery that I was embroidering had to somehow make sense with the medium. And I did like that idea, especially when I did the homes. Because the homes, I liked the idea of using this, well, I guess, very homey type medium for a domestic concept of homes. And then I've also loved tying in my embroidery work involving or intertwining into the concept of my heritage and my grandma's, who used to do embroidery work and used to do tatting, doily making, and that kind of stuff. So I really would, when I would get conceptual, I would intertwine the medium with the actual concept. But, and I felt like I had to for a long time too. But then after that, I was like, no, whatever my concept is, I just want to use embroidery for it. As right now, I have a show coming up in April. I'm doing a couple pieces for a show in April, or no, not April, May. The pieces are due at the end of April. And the concept of them is very personal to me about my growth and stuff like that. And it's like, from here on out, it doesn't matter what my concept is. I'm going to be using embroidery, just like a painter would be using paint. And it doesn't really tie into why I'm in the embroidery work isn't really tied into the concept anymore. It's just the medium that I'm using.
Yeah, I feel like it's a process that everyone has to go through in this medium, though, because this medium is...
In this medium, it, for sure, because it's a craft, or like a tapestry, it's I feel like people would get confused, like, well, what the concept is this? Why are they using... Why is she using embroidery work to do this? If people want to question it, I don't care anymore.
Yeah.
It's my medium.
Yeah, and it comes from a place of, like, peace when you can just go, I'm an artist that uses embroidery, because you've had to go through that whole, you know, talking about the gender discourse, talking about the art versus craft thing. I think you know, I've spoken to enough people now that I see people at different points of that journey, and I recollect my own going through it.
Yeah.
So when you get to that point where you're just like, no, I'm an artist and this is my medium, like when we can just call it art and we don't have to call it textile art, or we don't have to call it needlework art.
Yeah, we don't have to try to defend it as a contemporary fine art, you know?
Thanks for joining me on another Needle Exchange. I hope you enjoyed the show. I'd love to hear from you, so feel free to email hello@needle.exchange, that's needle.exchange, with any thoughts, comments or feedback. And if you want to keep up with all the news, sign up to the Needle Exchange mailing list at bit.ly/needle exchange. See you next time.